Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romain, and you're listening to SupDoc, a show where we talk to our interesting friends from the worlds of comedy, writing, TV, and film about their favorite hand-picked documentary.
Today, we sat down with comedian and podcaster David Huntsberger, the co-host of Professor Blastoff and host of Reactor on the Sci-Fi Channel. David is a frequent guest on Allison Rosen It's Your New Best Friend, Scarborough Country, and Doug Loves Movies. He's recorded 3 comedy albums and appeared on Comedy Central and Last Comic Standing.
David brought us the documentary Man vs. Snake, currently streaming on Netflix. Man vs. Snake is about Timothy McVeigh. No, not that one. Who, at 16, was the first person to score a billion points on a video game.
And now, here's David Huntsberger. All right, I'm just rolling, guys. It's all a roll.
You're just rolling it?
Oh man, we're podcasting.
Are we podcasting right now?
I don't know if you know what it's like to do a podcast. But thanks for coming over to our humble studio, David Huntsberger.
What's up, Doc?
Yeah. What is up?
And I'm glad that we were able to do this. And I think I wrote you on Twitter about this, and then you responded. Oh. I was like very happy.
Yeah, I didn't know it was you, and then it takes very little to be like an effective detective, which why isn't that more commonly lumped together?
Effective detective?
Effective.
Effective. The effective detective.
Yeah, that should be something.
That should be something.
But I thought, oh, I wonder who this is. Like, I don't know where. I started responding with like all these questions, and then I thought, I should just click on it, do a little reading, and then I saw your name. I thought, well, at least I know George. It makes sense. Because when Professor Blastoff was popular, we'd get asked, or you know, independently too, to do things, and it would be from people I'd never heard of or didn't know. So it is kind of nice when it's someone that you know. Really. Okay.
When it's someone you don't have to ignore.
Well, I mean, I hate to ignore anybody. I start to now feeling a little bit more like there's so many words out there, and like,
yeah, there's a lot of words.
When people go, I know you're busy, like. No, no one's that busy, but there's just so many words being said. I want to like make sure.
You want to be an effective worder.
Yeah.
You want your
which sadly there's no rhyme to the end of that.
No.
But.
Yeah.
The carbon footprint of podcasting has not been figured out.
An effective descriptive.
The amount of water going through a server in Georgia for this to be aired by people. Are you doing a podcast right now?
It's very poorly advertised, but nice. It's just me sitting down having beers with scientists. So it's kind of if you know, like when a band breaks up and then, oh, the guy who plays the mandolin went off and did some right. mandolin records. Like, that's pretty much all it is.
Oh,
like,
really? Did you want a beer? We have beers.
Oh, sure. If you guys are having beers, I'll have one. Otherwise, I'm good with water.
I don't drink. I just have beers from
I had many
a comedy show that went wrong. So
what kind of beers?
Let me take a look.
Okay, if you have something exotic, perhaps I'll partake.
What's the name of your beer science?
It's called Space Cave. So the idea is that it takes place deep removed from everything. Don't you feel like there's kind of a black hole of everyone's every single thought being sucked into the same place? You know, I will have one of those. Those are good. Thanks, man. Nah, that's fine. And so I wanted to just do something, which is tough, like when there's bad news. You can't, or something that's like so attention grabbing where you it feels weird to ignore it. It feels weird to just talk like, hey, everybody, what's going on? And like, we should probably address that this happened. Right. However, as much as possible, I try to like get away from that just for there to be something. And I know, maybe in art in general, it feels this way where so many performers go, I just want people to have fun. You're like, nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. However, if everything is that, then it just becomes this, like, we're just chimps throwing around our own shit going, fun, everything's fun. Yeah. Like, shouldn't we give some thought to this or a little attention to whatever that is. So I struggle with that duality, but for the podcast, I mostly try to ignore all the shit that's taking everyone's attention and focus and just try to have these conversations that typically, I mean, they'll always with scientists in some way or another discuss like political things or the fear of like losing funding and or just a general people giving a shit about what they do. But beyond that, it's like it's usually just sort of a conversation about what is this? Why does this exist? How did this happen? And talking to someone that kind of knows the answers, which is so fascinating to
me.
And then beer just kind of like loosens them up or makes them more human or something like that.
I'm gonna smoke some weed with them.
Yeah, I mean that, I get, have you guys, I don't know, there's evidently something called like high science or something like that. And I've gotten asked to do that a couple times. I'm like, I don't smoke pot. I'm sorry. It sounds like a fun thing.
Yeah.
Because it's similar in that like, let's add weed to the equation.
Yeah, then we'll really hear some stuff.
Yeah. Like history, but high science. Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah.
What's your science background?
I don't really, I mean, I got a degree in engineering, so, and then I have a minor in math as well. And I feel like that was the closest you could, for me, I could kind of get into seeing when everyone, I think the first time where just the general public flipped out was like at the Fibonacci sequence in the, what was that, one of the Angels and Demons or something like that. One of those books, like Da Vinci.
Yeah,
the Da Vinci Code. But I mean, what he stumbled onto there with like the golden ratio and things like that, it is compelling when you see like, you know, a snail's shell, the spiral that it takes, or sunflower seeds or ram's horn or all these different things that sort of correspond to this mathematical makeup. That to me was pretty fascinating. And I think it sort of, to me, especially with physics and stuff, just slowly set in motion this idea of like, could we solve it? Is this something we're supposed to solve?
Yeah.
That's about it. So I, with with engineering, like I wasn't that science-y, but I think it gives me just enough credibility to talk with scientists and be like, oh, well, I have a science degree.
Yeah. You're like, whoo. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Okay, I'll tell you the secrets
I will
now.
Take that beer.
Yeah, I don't know too many mathematician comedy people. I guess there's like, it's sort of like a proofs, right? You're kind of like dealing with logic all the time, or like trying to like find like,
oh, that's one of them. I mean, so what the furthest I really got up into, I did a graduate level course as an undergraduate, and basically the professor just said, if you just show up, I'll pass you, because you're not going to understand this. Right. If you can just be attentive and try your best. And it was such a bummer, because there's always a part of you that feels like, what if I'm one of those secret geniuses and I don't know
like Matt Damon.
But he knows he's a genius in that. Like, don't you always wonder, like, what if I just every few years sit down at a piano, oh shit, it's happening, and you just know it.
You just can never stop.
I don't have the brain injury that lets me play piano well, apparently.
And that's how I was with math, where I thought, okay, and I really tried hard. But you know, in Good Will Hunting, where like there's the the dots and the sticks between them, and some of those equations, you're like, I've never seen that before. Mm-hmm. So the numerology, the even just like the linguistic element of it changes, where the symbolism that you're seeing, like second order partial differential equations, have all these big looping sort of, it's hard to explain what exactly they are. They kind of like the change of time with respect to distance over this integral. How does this function? So you're dealing with like, say you, maybe you had to deal with an engine and like the cylinders independently, what is their like temperature change within or something like that. You would use differential equations to give you an idea. Like, okay, here's math modeling as to like why an engine behaves the way it does or something like that. And so that's about as close as I got to where I was like, that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah,
I didn't understand it nearly enough, but I still like talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I just thought you were going to do like brief history of time for us or something. Like that was what you were going to pick. And then you chose a totally different direction of a documentary.
Oh, right. Yeah. There aren't a ton of science ones, I suppose, that as of late that have grabbed my attention, I guess. I mean, the OJ one, I assumed you guys had already talked about
that.
Yeah,
we did the
it's
OJ one.
It's the greatest.
Yeah.
The White Helmets, I watched that.
Oh, geez.
Did you see it?
I have not watched it.
That's worth seeing. But then there's a whole lot of stuff there that I was curious if you guys were like into all that shit as far as the two things I didn't know about. Like, if you watch it, even like Bashar al-Assad is the worst guy. Everyone hates him.
But talking about White Helmets right now?
Talking about White Helmets. Yeah. Then you start hearing people be like, the people don't hate him. And some of this is media driven. And the White Helmets, no one knows where their funding comes from. And like, they are kind of our intel for the U.S. And so when we're hearing like, he gassed his own people, he poisoned his own people, there's this other faction that's like, That's not true. This is all fake. It's so bizarre to me. And I don't want to delve into it because it feels too much like 1984 of like everything's being dictated to us.
Yeah.
But when I saw videos there was a Canadian reporter who was pressing a guy being like, you always, with the white helmets, act as if they are like, they have carte blanche, but they reference the same source. And when we follow up on this girl, I think her name's Aaliyah or something like that, she's referenced as the source in like three or four different events that are hundreds of miles apart. Mm. So there are these weird little things where I was like, that's too much for me. I'm staying out of it. Mm-hmm. So the white helmets is compelling. It's sad as shit, but 13? You guys have done that one, right?
No. We have not done that.
Oh, man. That's what we should. That's the best. It's so good.
That has nothing to do with the video game Snake.
13 is heavy.
It's heavy. It's like required watching. Yeah. Man versus Snake, it definitely is not, but it's fun. Like, it's fun to watch.
We like the fun ones. It's hard to do. Like, what is the most like sensitive topic that we've done on this show?
Glenn Campbell.
Maybe Alzheimer's.
No. Sensitive topic.
I mean, there's like real murders that we talk about all the time, but we're so used to murder just being entertainment.
Yeah.
That, which is also a whole other thing in itself. Like, why are we so okay with that? It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we haven't done like
13th, we probably should do. I think it's like finding someone who, it's like we try to pair the guest and the doc in a way, like a wine and a fish. But it's like, who do we get? Someone who's been in prison? Like, what do we, you know, like
someone who's African American that can speak.
I don't think you, and then you could make the sort of thing that, like, well, or just as a white dude, i.e. me, maybe that's your target, because then that's who it's meant to kind of break through to, is like, oh, I'm so privileged and just living
this
life.
Privilege.
Of, not being aware at all.
I'm always checking his privilege in this show. Yeah. It's pretty much what I constantly do.
It's fantastic, though, for that, because it doesn't do it in any other way than what my favorite thing about science is like, here is a bunch of facts.
Yeah.
Here's data.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you are still upset about something after this, it's probably on you.
Yeah.
And so,
and so
I love that. Like, I just, it's hard to watch because it changes your perspective as it's happening. And you're like, what? Yes. I didn't know
this
part.
When they get into the prison
part.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, what the fuck?
And Alec and things like that. Yeah. Like, the government being so affected by
privatizing prisons. And this prison wants more prisoners because they also own the place that makes the food, you know, and the shoes.
I was hearing that New York was going to divest from retirement funds that any companies that were private prisons. Yeah.
So well, now, I mean, private prisons are going away, thankfully.
Sessions, that was one of his first orders of business.
He wants private prisons, mm-hmm. Well, and he's from the South, which is where, like, that's all that shit happens.
Yeah.
But Man vs. Snake was very entertaining. I enjoyed it. I really love King of Kong.
Shifted gears very quickly.
Yeah.
Let's get off of all this. Yeah. This is a separate Patreon podcast about politics.
Oh, you should do that. Yeah, like, have the heavy hitting ones. Like,
yeah, I think we are going to. Now,
only
maybe.
For our Patreon listeners. They get all the sad shit.
We're going to riff over the Oliver Stone.
Give us $5 a month and then cry.
Yeah.
Might be where the delineation in podcasting potentially is. Like, King of Kong, to me, was kind of the first one that was movie-esque in its quality of, like, it wasn't unmasking anything. It was just telling a story.
Character study.
And up until then, documentaries, to me, were probably synonymous, like, this can be a little boring, but it'll be good for me.
Yeah.
I should learn this bit about Vietnam, or PBS did one on the Mormons that was very just educational, which is dry. Right. So you're like, okay, this is very dry, but I'm learning a lot.
Right.
Whereas King of Kong was the first one that was like, I'm buckled in. Yeah. I'm like bolted to my chair. I gotta see this guy win. And so to see them come back with another one that's very similar, like Man vs. Snake.
Billy Mitchell is, I mean, he's...
Yeah, the same character.
Same fucking tie.
But isn't he a little bit more endearing this time?
He is, of course. Yeah. Well, because that was the criticism of King of Kong is they edited it to make Billy Mitchell look like an asshole. My friend, Zach Wallens, in San Francisco, who is the pinball champion of the world, knows Billy Mitchell. Always tells me he's the sweetheart. Like, he's a really nice guy.
It's just editing.
Just editing, clever editing.
But they needed a villain. They needed a villain in that.
And they
movie.
Got one that wears a Statue of Liberty tie.
I mean, you could not have set up three cameras better to watch him when he walks by and ignores him. That's such a dick move.
Yeah.
And it's captured so well where he's kind of looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like, who is this? It is Scott Weeb. Wasn't that his name?
That sounds very familiar.
I remember because it sounded like Dweeb. So okay, I kind of remember. Yeah. It was like Scott Weebe or something like that.
Yep. Yeah. In that Seattle. Sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. You were bullying in your mind.
I was. Yeah. That's how I remember.
Cyberbullying.
What's the word for when you use sound associations to remember things?
Onomatopoeia?
Mnemonic?
Mnemonic. Yeah. I'm a bully. I'm a mnemonic bully, basically. But so.
Yeah, this is kind of like in the same continuity as King of Kong.
Yes.
The way I think about it. And like, they're like, it's like the, what's a spinoff? It's Laverne and Shirley is a spinoff of Happy Days.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's kind of like, this is like the Laverne and Shirley.
Yes.
To the Happy Days.
Okay. Interesting.
Kind of.
Or the Better Call Saul? Is that a better analogy? I don't know.
I mean, it could just be the sequel.
Well, those both had the same directors and writers. This one's a completely different director.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah. So,
but and is this a genre that we potentially could see over and over because there is a goal line or there's a finish line?
Yeah.
And there's always going to be someone that wants to either cross it again or beat someone who has crossed it long ago.
Well, and that's how this ends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally how
climbing Everest. Yeah.
How this documentary ends with someone else that takes on the mantle of fucking...
Well, the best part about it is Nibbler. How he... Yeah, at Nibbler, how he... So the setup, you know, different... Like King of Kong, where he's like, I've been good at one thing in my life, and I've got to accomplish something, which is such a relatable feeling.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I think he was like a plumber, too, an electrician or something.
When he's sitting there just like crying, you're like, God, come on, man. It's brutal. And then this guy you root for a little less because like he got to the mountaintop, and then he ceased to sort of care.
Yes.
He gains a bunch of weight.
Ton.
Yeah. He drinks Mountain Dew nonstop. He's content in his
giant cup.
The huge cup.
Holy shit.
But then still manages to maintain this weird heightened sense of achievement of like, no one's going to believe me, but this is like running a marathon, only harder.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, look at you. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of times in King of Kong and Man vs. Snake where they refer to themselves as pro athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's like, you know, like, I mean, it's like me, like, I'm kind of like Brad Pitt. You know, it's like you can't, there's a point when you can't compare anymore. You know,
I wonder about it though, like the ingredients that would make an ultra marathoner. It's something that I would assume the three of us don't have. I certainly don't.
No.
And so maybe it has less to do with physical fitness and there's some chip in the head. And so to be one of these weird gamers has something that like no pro athlete has really ever retired from their career and been like, you know what I want to do? This is marathon level of gaming.
Right.
They don't follow into it. So what is the chip that like it, everything in their life kind of adds onto it? Meaning like, oh, I'm a skydiver who wears one of those squirrel suits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a lot of stuff that led to that happening. Mm-hmm, but you being a gamer, like a love of not working is probably part of it. there's all these little things in there. Where
sounds of the... enjoying sounds and sights and smells.
I was
thinking
there might be a generation divide with this... or like the people that like certain eras of games, right? Like there's a generation divide between arcade games
and home video console.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think there's like there is this weird thing where like it was kind of still weirdly social to do games back in when that guy was like 16.
You could 84. Be the coolest person in a room.
Yeah.
And people gathered around you watching.
And there was girls. There were there would be, because we had an arcade. I'm sure you guys had arcades. I'm sorry, where'd you grow up, Dave?
Reno, Nevada.
Oh, okay. There's...
So, yeah, down at Circus Circus.
Yeah,
there was,
of course.
Oh, I've been to the Circus Circus.
I have, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that fun? The kids' area not only had all the arcade games and then the throw darts and stuff, but in the center, they had one of those cages where motorcycles would ride around in them.
I did not see that.
And it went up, right?
It would raise
up into the air. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Wow. And you could also just smoke hella cigarettes.
To this day. Yeah, you still... Well, some of them you can't now. Okay. Some of you can no longer smoke inside. But yeah, for the longest time, casinos were like the final bastion of where you could smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
But so as a kid, walking around, breathing all that cigarette smoke, watching the cage go up as...
That's awesome.
It was really neat.
You grew up in... I mean, come on. That's where that shit goes on. That's...
Yeah.
Awesome. Did you have a game growing up? Did you have a arcade game that was yours?
There was never one that I was fantastic at. I liked... Cruising USA or like Baja, remember that one where you drive through the flags. That was fun. I remember the first time I saw, I think, Street Fighter as a video game, like as an arcade game, where I was pretty good at Mortal Kombat. I liked that. But there was nothing where it took my attention and I just stayed up at night thinking about it or begged my mom, like, we got to go play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't that into really any of the games.
I liked Galaga a lot.
Yeah, I liked Galaga too.
When I first moved to San Francisco, one of the first conversations I had with my roommate was like, I was like, "What? So what goes around in this neighborhood?" And she looked at me, she said, "There's, if you play it, there's a Galaga arcade game at the laundromat across the street."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm home." Like, that's awesome.
That's incredible. Yeah. What a strange thing for someone, like, not food.
No,
not.
It was she literally was like, "Galaga across the street at the laundromat." And I was like, that's so cool.
I was never good at the games, but I really, for a while, was really into Area 51. Which is a shooter game.
Yeah. Isn't that what, that was one of the first ones where you held a rifle gun.
Yeah, and they were like pistols, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then I would go to this, our
did you have to tilt it down to reload it?
Yeah, yeah, you off screen, so it would be like, and you hear the click.
Yeah.
It was so satisfying.
Yeah.
And then, like, one time at the Albany Bowl, the bowling alley in Albany, where we would go, and they had an Area 51, I saw a guy just, like, double quartering, playing players 1 and 2.
Whoa.
Just like standing this far away, just like,
yeah,
both pistols firing, playing for both players.
I love
just insane level of
See, now that does leak into the pro athlete kind of thing, because you still remember that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
From whatever.
I'm like, that is a feat. That is a bizarre feat.
I mean, it's like watching someone who's very, very good at something that you're probably never going to be that good.
Competence
at.
Porn.
Yeah,
competence porn.
Yeah, I guess there is that thing where we easily scoff at stuff, especially if someone looks like just Joe Average.
Right.
But then to watch yourself do it, you can. We would scoff off someone playing video games, like, well, of course, if I put in 1,000 hours, I'd be good at that. Mm-hmm. But no one watches pro sports. And goes, of course, if I put in 1,000 hours, I'd be scoring touchdowns in the NFL as well. No one feels that way, but it's so much easier with video games.
Well, you can look like anything and be any size. And to be a pro athlete, you have to fit a certain physical like definition. And this guy obviously does.
I was even thinking of, like, just you know, that movie, that Mike Birbiglia movie that came out last year about improv. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a scene where Chris Gethard's, like, working at the store. He's like, I have, like, a superpower. I'm killing it in one aspect of my life, but you would not know that because I just am a guy working in a store, you know?
It's like a gauntlet right now, you know? His vision at this point is getting blurry, and his brain's starting to not process as quick, and you can hear his hands are not moving as quickly as they should. His whole body is wanting to shut down because any human being in their right mind would shut down now. And he's having to push through it. It's really impressive. Boy, this is going to be tough. He's going to be beat tomorrow. Whatever happens tonight, he is going to be whipped.
Yeah, not bad for an old man, I guess. Yeah, I see my right hand, though. It's hamburger. Damn it! Yeah, this last 5 hours is going to be a bitch.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Tim McVeigh is who we're
Tim McVeigh,
about.
Yep.
Tim McVeigh.
Unfortunate name.
Anyone else peak at 16? I feel like I did in some
and
way.
And felt fine about it. How did you peak?
Well, I don't know. I started a magazine when I was like 15. And
precocious.
Like, yeah, so it kind of did feel like I always wanted to be a child prodigy. Ah. And that was like the closest I got to being. Yeah. Like, I hung out with people that were slightly older than me that weren't, they're just like only like 4 years older than me. But I felt like I was like, yeah, I'm above like all these high school people.
Right, right. Yeah.
And
what was your magazine called?
Zum, which is like the same as the record label that I did. So I had this weird thing that's followed me for most of my life that I thought was a funny idea when I was like 14, 15. So now, you know, I wouldn't say I actually peaked, but in some ways, like, I relate to like people that are like child actors or whatever. Like, you kind of got attention for something as a child,
yeah,
and then you're like, I still want that attention. I don't know how to not get that anymore.
Yeah.
And then somehow I ended up doing stand-up, so right, it kind of worked out.
You're chasing the dragon still. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Timothy McVeigh, and so in 1983, he scored 1 billion points in Nibbler at the Twin Cities Arcade in Ottumwa, Iowa, which is awesome. Everything about that sentence is awesome.
Like, and that it's the epicenter. That they still refer to the referee shirt guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Walter Day.
Twin Galaxies.
Yeah.
Is a billion a million million?
It's 1,000 million.
It's 1,000 million? Okay.
And Nibbler is one of the only arcade games that would turn over.
Oh, right.
So that's why you could actually get it. It had 9 digits and would turn over. So you could actually get more than a billion on the game that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
Had you ever heard of it before?
I'd heard of Nibbler.
Oh, you had?
But I don't know that if you asked me, what is it, that I could have explained it. Right. I just knew the name. And maybe that was only from Futurama or something like that. I don't know that I fully knew, like, oh, yeah, this is what the game is.
Is there a character called Nibbler?
Oh, there is a character called Nibbler on Futurama. But I thought about that game Snake on my phone that I had in 2000.
Yeah,
I thought that's what you were at first. Was a documentary about, is it about that weird snake game? Oh,
yeah, because I used to play that a ton. Like, I had a TI-85 I think that had it, and you could play the snake, and you know, so the waiting till the end and then hitting it.
Yeah.
But this one has sparkles and it has different levels, it seems like. It's not just the snake the whole time.
And you can also rest. You can build up lives.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, and let your lives just trickle down. So you can go get a hot dog and, like, I'm burning 99 guys into 50 guys.
Yeah, you can go get a hot dog, exactly. Go get some rest, get a hot dog. Well, this dude, Timothy McVeigh, he sees Tom Yosaki, who was the Pac-Man champion?
Sounds right.
An unfortunate, like, child prodigy that desperately is chasing that around again. Like, where do you go if you're on the covers of magazines?
Yeah.
You're getting these, you know, plaques and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, man, that's it. Your life's kind of done.
Well, and Pac-Man, I don't know how old you are, but like in the 80s, like Pac-Man was it. It was
the first one that really broke out.
It was gigantic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if you were good on Pac-Man and or Miss Pac-Man, like, you had shit going on.
Miss Pac-Man is such a scam.
It is. Yeah, it is.
She's got that bow.
But like, Mr. T, Pac-Man, Coca-Cola, Reagan, I mean, like, and then hair bands.
80s.
We're learning a lot about Paco.
Sunglasses with the little lines through them.
I had those. Plus the ones that fold up and you put in the little fake leather pouch. These things are awesome, dude.
Yep. A lot of cool sunglasses things happen.
That's for me.
Garfield, he hates lasagna. But so Tim sees Tom fucking jamming at Pac-Man and he's like, I could do that. Mm-hmm. And people are like, you're fucking nuts, Timothy McVeigh. And he was like, nah, dude. And then he shows up and he takes on the Nibbler challenge and he fucking crushes.
Wait, no, I thought the impetus of the whole story was that the Italian guy had broken the record and that he said, oh, I always said, and I'm quoted in the paper, if someone tops it, I'll come back and beat it again.
Well, that originally, though, it was, I think, watching Tom do so well that he was like, I can do that. And people are like,
Italian guy doesn't come in until maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, really? In my mind, it's been like probably 3 or 4 months, I guess, since I watched it. In my mind, that's what set in motion. It's almost like he got a notice, you've been summoned, and then he starts pursuing it.
Well,
Enrico, I mean,
that is basically right. Mm-hmm. But the chronologically, the way the doc works is that he's 16, he's there, he sees Tom, he's like, I could do that. People are like, no, you can't.
Oh, and then, gotcha. Then that's what makes him first time.
Okay. 36 hours, he gets a billion, goes home, and his mom makes him macaroni and cheese.
Falls asleep.
The animation style for that. Yeah. We're just talking about the animation for that.
It's pretty.
And it does remind me of Bob's Burgers a lot. Like I was saying, Schoolhouse Rocks meets Bob's Burgers. But then he wakes up, eats his mac and cheese like a good kid, from Iowa, gets on his bike, goes back to the arcade to see like what the hubbub might be, and then he's just fucking. People are like, what?
Yeah, he's the king of Wahumba, Iowa? What's it called?
Ottumwa.
Ottumwa.
Which is where Radar O'Reilly's from. from MASH. Just saying. Okay. I'm a big MASH nerd. But I know it's weird.
Didn't know. That's our other podcast.
Oh, dude. Like, if we did
watch
a MASH,
every episode of MASH, and I'll be like, why is this funny?
You know what we'd
why
call
is
it?
There a laugh track?
We'd call it Swamp. The Swamp would be the name of that podcast.
Would that be the name of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think. I love MASH. I made my
not
dad.
Not Altman? No.
No, not the Altman movie, but I like that too. But my dad and I were big Civil War buffs, and we would go on recreation. We'd go and follow the war recreation stuff, and we were about 500 miles from Washington, D.C., and I saw a pamphlet that the MASH exhibit was at the Smithsonian, and I was like, Dad, we've got to go, and I forced him. So we went way off our path to go see. So I could walk through I walked through the swamp and the post op, and I got to see the sign and shit.
Nice.
Awesome, yeah. I had MASH belt buckle and t-shirts and hats, and I had the TV guide from when it first came out, and its last one, Farewell, Goodbye, and Amen.
Okay,
this is riveting. I feel like there should be a documentary about this.
Yeah. Paco, the MASH historical, it's like a Civil War recreation, but so MASH.
Alan Alda was on KQED on Friday, and I called. I could not get in. I wanted to talk because he's been my idol since I was a kid. I used to dress as Hawkeye for Halloween when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I tried to talk to him, but I couldn't get through.
What was the guy's name who talked like this? Was he
the Colonel?
The Colonel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Henry. Harry Morgan. Yeah.
Harry Morgan. Yeah. Is that his name in the show?
Colonel, the actor, I think, is Henry Morgan.
It's Colonel. Well, there's Henry Blake, and then Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake, and then Colonel.
This is his nibbler.
Potter.
This is Paco's nibbler.
Potter. Yeah. Harry Morgan was the actor. Colonel Potter.
Paco peaked at 16.
It was a little. It was before me, so when I would see it, I would see it in reruns. But I just remember there'd be some sort of quip about hot lips, and then they're, wah, keep it together, gang. And then Alan Alda, like, giving some levity. And then all of a sudden, someone would die, and someone would walk outside and take off a surgery mask and just sort of, why, God? And
it was all I remember.
No
that
show's
the song.
Ever had all that together.
No, like, it was awesome.
Saint Elsewhere is the only one.
It was like a Bertolt Brecht play would get into, like, a Three Stooges moment, and, like, they had, it was awesome. That's what made MASH so great. 12 seasons.
I think it was too much
CBS.
For me as a kid. Yeah. Like, stick with what was funny. Much. Let Alan Alda be funny, and I don't need to see like someone's guts spewing out of it.
But old ferret face. I mean, come on.
This has been a Patreon only aspect of the show.
I love but
MASH talk.
I
with
love
Paco.
It. I've never met someone that was that into MASH.
Oh, dude! I had the MASH trivia set. So I would have friends come over and try to play me in MASH trivia, and I would just destroy them. Yeah,
I loved it.
Can
MASH
I pitch
so
this idea, Paco, David? You guys talk to a real war surgeon for your podcast and be like, "Do the guts really? How long are people alive when the guts hang out?" And that
has to be a Korean War, though. Yeah. I think. But back to Man versus Snake.
No, I'm gonna talk about
MASH.
Sex in the City and no. Like, another war show. China Beach. Let's talk about China Beach. No.
That was, or Mark Helgenberger. After MASH, which was a spinoff.
Oh gosh,
there was a show called After MASH.
I do kind of remember that
didn't
happening.
Did MASH do like 20 seasons?
12. 12 seasons on CBS.
Almost as long as,
it was the longest running show.
For live action. Like Simpsons is the longest now, right?
And that, Cheers beat it.
Cheers
ended up beating MASH, and then The Simpsons just
now,
destroys it.
Cheers. Everything. Okay, you want to do a podcast about Cheers?
I would love that. That would be awesome.
I'll get into that. I got a lot of theories.
We named our dog Coach. For the first,
the best character,
yes, for Coach.
Oh yeah,
it really falls off the rails after 5 seasons, I would say.
Yeah,
pretty much when Diane is,
The Kirstie Alley era. You don't like the Kirstie Alley era?
No, I didn't. I felt like they're just too ground in at that point.
Yeah, once they knew what was going on, which made it kind of weird.
Yeah,
just George Wentz just cashing those checks.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll be in a Michael Jackson.
Have you
Jackson
seen
video.
The Doc Grizzly Man?
Yeah,
because he talks about auditioning for Woody.
But I feel like that is the most classic I was this close Hollywood story in the history.
And then goes bonkers.
There's so many people. I bet
Woody Harrelson
could
have been eaten by a bear.
He could have been, yes.
Yeah, would the same fate have awaited
Woody Harrelson? Yeah.
Little did they know, whoever was at that test screening, one of them would be
eaten. Well, Woody Harrelson's dad was like a murderer.
What?
Woody Harrelson's dad was in prison for murder. Like, he came from this crazy family.
And then he was in...
True Detective.
No. What's before that?
True Romance.
No. This other Tarantino movie, though, with Natural Born Killers.
Oh, Natural Born
that's
Killers.
That's right. Yeah, Harrelson. Yeah.
Woody Harrelson has this crazy background. He... Whew. Yeah.
Look, well, I want him as a guest, yeah. So let's not totally disparage. He's definitely booked for October.
Yes.
So
oh my God, we
we're
going to
talk about Wilson, and it'll be I don't know. I don't know what documentary Woody Harrelson would want to talk about.
No, probably something really cool.
Something weed related. Weed
hemp, hemp related. Although he recently said he stopped smoking. Crazy. Oh,
that is crazy. Speaking of weed related. So one of my favorite things about Tim McVeigh was his Pink Floyd sweatpants. I just have to say that. You don't remember that?
What, he did they have the rainbow on them?
He had a Dark Side of the Moon sweatpants.
I missed that completely.
Yeah. I think I missed that.
As a kid?
No, no.
As a man.
When he was working at the mechanic shop.
Yeah. He works in like a machining place and just this very, very simple existence. And then I think when he's maybe taking time off is when someone goes, where are you going? And there's a camera crew there. You know, I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
That's
He's very, that's what I love about these video game guys. They can call themselves supernatural or, you know, whatever, professional athletes, but even when they're being boastful, there's still this weird endearing quality because there's a humility there of like, I don't want much out of life.
Yeah.
I work this basic job. I found joy in this one little thing. I happen to be really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see them kind of bristle up a little bit when someone's like, you're famous. Like, I guess I'm kind of famous.
Yeah.
Cool. Good luck out there.
Yeah.
And it's fun when they pack their bags and like he's never flown before.
Oh, that's
And like, he's got to put his like his... They get to bring their own board. Yeah, as he packs his own board.
That's right.
There's something really sweet about that.
Yeah,
about
and, and his wife, who's also very sweet.
Totally
and she's just kind of like, he does drive me crazy a little bit, but...
Oh, that's got to be tough for her to watch. Remember, what is he eating when he's plowing down something and then he quits?
Like a buttered pizza?
Yeah.
Like a pizza with butter on the crust?
Yeah, it's real. Like, his friends are coming by, like, we're there for you, buddy. But he's real kind of rude to them.
He's been up for like 30 hours.
Yeah.
I'm rude to people after 8 hours of sleep.
Like, sleep deprivation is a big part of this.
Yeah, it is. And also, so in 83 when he wins, he gets the fucking key to the city.
Mm-hmm. I forgot
the mayor gives him the key to the city. They call it the Tim McVeigh Day.
It's
the first time in the history of the world a video gamer has gotten this kind of like recognition. Mm-hmm. And then they give him a nibbler.
He gets a nibbler.
And he ends up having to sell it.
He
right?
sells it for $50 to the arcade next to the Twin
the competing,
Cities.
The competing.
Like, what a fucking dick.
Yeah, that is a dick. There's no other way to go.
That's such a dick move. It's awesome.
Dick Bay.
And then he's always saying, like, he was like, I was kind of an asshole back then. He was like, real, like,
I forget like if that was the reason. Was he just kind of big for his britches?
He wanted the money.
He wanted money and he sold it for $50.
But he got it for credits.
Yeah, coin credits.
To the opposite, the competing arcade.
Yeah. And they like shipped it to his house and he was like, it was just in the way. I mean, you know, he's 16. So.
I can attest to though, after college, I ended up, my friend had a actual arcade game cabinet. And was moving, God, I think I helped move it into her apartment at one point, which was in Oakland up like two flights of stairs, four dudes. Those things, it's like piano moving. Those things are monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we ended up with it at our house, and it was Arkanoid. Do you guys know Arkanoid?
No.
It's sort of like a ball paddle game. You catch, you're trying to break bricks with a ball and you have a paddle that's just bouncing back up.
Yeah, yeah.
But then sometimes you would get a laser or you get some other multi-ball or something like that. So we had unlimited Arkanoid in our house and that was not good for anyone. But it was rough. Wow. Have you ever been up for 40 hours?
Yes. I used to do that in high school. I used to love sleep deprivation kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've done it probably 35 hours, maybe something like that. Because I used to, especially when I was drawing comics a lot, I really liked the little ideas that float into your head when you're without sleep. It's like a free drug trip. But I don't know that I ever went beyond, like, stay up all day, stay up that whole night, and then probably usually by the next day at 7 p.m. I was asleep or something like that. So
yeah.
Is that 36 hours? Something like that, probably.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly what... I remember being really sick and just being awake the whole time. And I don't remember exactly why, but sometime in college, I think it involved like trying to make my own falafels and giving myself terrible food poisoning and then just being like really awake, but then like not able to eat also at the same time. So just like going into a very bizarre headspace, but not for, and I played a lot of video games at certain points in my life, not like nothing like, where I was any good at it, I just like was bored and it was there and I've done that. but so I don't like video games that much. Mm-hmm. I get kind of like, if I had been into it in my 30s, I think that we would not be here right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know where I kind of had to make that decision when, and I barely got into it, but I think it was PlayStation 1 when the first Grand Theft Auto came out. Mm-hmm. And that was the first game where like your identity was in a slight way more tied to the character than Zelda or mm-hmm. Mario or whoever, like, because you're being told, like, yeah, go, this mm-hmm. can work out in so many different ways.
Yeah.
It's not like, rah, 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 you fall right. into lava or whatever. Like, oh, you crashed the car. The cops got you.
Yeah.
Oh, that pimp came over and shot you. That yeah. There's mm-hmm. so many ways, like, realistically, like, yeah. this is real. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, I kept failing at this one mission, and then I was just, it was a moment of, like, that's enough of this.
Yeah.
I'm fine failing in life, but I can't fail digitally
yeah.
over and over.
I had that realization too. Like, I'm going to tap out of GoldenEye because I'm, yeah. like, I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
But I'm stuck the way James Bond is stuck.
Right.
In this right now. He's just like doing this like in a corner. I'm like, that is what, this is a metaphor for my life right now.
Dude, Rockstar Games, like that first Grand Theft Auto was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Like that shit was, we'd stay it's up incredible. For hours and play that fucking, and remember the map?
Yeah.
Like the map that
and
came
how
it
would
it.
Open up.
Yeah.
And when you're new to LA, it feels very much like that, where you're like, all right, I got this central area figured out.
Yeah.
Oh, now the valley opened up. Yeah. Now the west side opened up.
Was that
up.
The San Andreas one?
No, I think that was later on. The first one felt more like Bay Area-like, because you get to go over the bridge.
Yeah,
and the
there's
map
a bridge.
Up.
That's right. Yeah.
Are you guys into any of the virtual reality stuff? Have you done the Oculus Rift stuff?
I've done a little bit, and I haven't done anything that was so earth-shattering to me where I was like, I live here now. Mm-hmm. I'm in this reality.
Yeah. I played some games. There's a VR arcade back in Kalamazoo where when I go home, it's really fun to mm-hmm. get some friends together. And I got to play a multiplayer kind of Call of Duty mm-hmm. VR game that was fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. It was lots of
nice.
Fun.
Do you like wipe down that goggle pretty good? You wipe down that
I should.
Foam,
I don't.
This the, foam
yeah.
around the
I
ski,
never
the
have.
Ski mask part, yeah.
The problem is it's still wired, so you can't.
Yeah.
You get caught up into it. You dodge
the problem. The one problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's going to be a lot of problems.
It's,
yeah.
it, that's, but it was lots of fun. And like the way they had the controller, it was like you would look through your scope, and if you moved your controller down too far, it would go out of focus.
Like just like this microphone,
just like my
faded
my,
when
just,
you
yes.
got
there's
off
so
mic.
Many implications there as far as like the future of children. Like telling a kid to uh-huh. stop playing a board game was hard enough. Like, put that down, and then now to be like, come out of that other reality.
Yeah.
It's so fun, and come back to this one where mm-hmm. you have to like clean your room.
Yeah,
and I think it could even mean something where like our experience in this reality could be fun. You could travel all over the world. You could scuba dive, climb mountains. You can do all that if you have enough money. Mm-hmm. And the people that are reliant on that to make all the money, like, we got to keep selling shit to these. If everyone just was like, nah, I'm just going to go in here. And society just mm-hmm. crumbles as people are like, I'm disappearing into this one.
Yeah, I like this one better.
Yeah, it seems totally realistic.
Well, VR porn, I mean, mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah, I've been doing a bit about, like, the future of gender, mostly just reproduction, and mm-hmm. that like the dopamine is the only thing we're after there. All the fluids and all this business, I don't think anyone likes that necessarily.
You want a dry cum?
I mean, imagine just having like full on dopamine release, and then you take out the headset and everything's clean.
Yeah.
You're fine. Like, I think people would prefer
no cleanup.
That. Yeah. People are like, no, I like wiping stuff up.
All the fun, none of the cleanup.
Yeah.
I mean, you were talking a little bit earlier about this idea of like if everything is just purely for pleasure, right? Were you saying something?
No,
about
I don't
that?
Think that was me.
Was I not? Okay, I thought you were saying that. I thought right when I was getting your beer,
George has been up for 36
oh, maybe
hours.
Maybe I was like that. Where the chimps just throwing stuff around,
right?
Like, constantly
yeah.
having fun. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's all it's meant to be. Like, you're this little being, you're born into existence. The mm-hmm. idea that we get isolated into countries or continents or cities or blah, blah, blah. Mm. Like, yeah, maybe you're just meant to be like, okay, go have fun. Go play on this round thing that's spinning around. And then you just get locked into this job or locked into, and instead it's supposed to be just throw around your shit a little bit.
Yeah.
Are you into evolutionary psychology stuff at all? Do you know
Not
a little bit about this stuff?
Okay. A little bit. I'm...
It's sort of like just thinking like what maybe at some point there was an whatever part of your brain that makes you a marathoner, like maybe there was some reason for that to exist at some point. Like I needed to stay awake mm-hmm. for 36 hours to prevent a serpent from attacking my village.
Yeah.
Like maybe like that's some kind of like thing that's kicking in. Like what, you know, it is like a superpower in a weird way because it's like not a thing that you would normally use. Like these guys have honed. You know who's actually Dwayne Richard is kind of like a polymath, though. He's like good at a bunch of different kind of games. All we know about Tim is he's good at Nibbler.
We don't know
about any other kind of game he's
good
at.
That is true. Mm-hmm. But he did say, they do show him playing some console games at one point. But yeah, you don't know much about it. So then he does really well. And then we get to Enrico from Italy. Okay. And this kid, around the same time period, breaks his record and gets more than a billion on, and then there's like celebration and yay, but like,
but he clearly kind of needs it less. Yeah. The referee guy won't observe it as
Walter,
an actual,
Walter Day.
Like, nope, we got to have a videotape of it, or we got to see, you know,
right.
And the kid's like, I don't care, I did it, you can do whatever.
He's like,
the hell
my life is fine.
But I feel like they do a pretty, obvious comparison between him and Timothy because they show him working out. He's very in shape. He's a black belt in kickboxing. Yep. He talks about
This is him in current day.
Day, like 30 years later. And it's like they show it in like his nice teeth, and he's handsome Italian man. He's a kickboxer and he's in great. And at one point they show him with his like shirt off in like a photo, and he's doing this kick and he's like ripped. And then literally the next scene is Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah. Who's the opposite of all that.
Yes. Yeah.
Not only is he out of shape, he looks like he's aggressively out of shape.
Yeah. He's, he's trying hard to be out of shape.
He's trying so hard to like sleep face first in pizza and very little.
Were you surprised to learn that he has been sleeping on a waterbed his entire life?
Not the slightest.
That just seems so decadent, to have a waterbed.
Yeah, he was worried about going to a hotel because I don't know how I'm going to sleep. I'm used to this waterbed.
Oh my God. And then,
about that life.
Then there's Walter Day, who we need to talk about a little bit. And he is the owner of Twin Cities Arcade in Ottumwa, Iowa.
And to be that solid, like this solidity or the just absolute knowledge of this is my life. Everyone kind of bounces around like, I don't know what I should do. You know, I could do this.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to be this sort of chairman of a video game. So I don't even know what you would call it. Like, almost like a statistician, but also kind of like a registrar. And then also kind of like this library and this archivalist. And it's a lot of stuff.
That's
there.
A
he's
lot.
Like, I'm managing video games and accomplishments at large the world over.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he obviously loves Billy Mitchell.
Yeah.
That dude loves himself some Billy Mitchell, which we learned in King of Kong.
Because, loves Timothy, though, too, in spite of him, you know, sort of slighting him with selling the video game next door and all that.
Yeah.
I think he views him as like a prodigy, as one of his proteges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I shepherded this.
He's a branch
talent
on his tree. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Walter, I mean, and he's been doing this stuff since the early 80s. He's been involved in video gaming.
He was smart to like get into it when he did.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like one of the first guys to do it.
Dropping acid and dropping out on Haight-Ashbury for a little bit.
Yeah, what was the story with him and the women? And he was like,
he was like
a strong guy,
dude.
Big buff guy.
Yeah, he was a big buff guy that could, he said that he could bench press 300 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then they have some reenactment of the ladies being like, oh, Walter.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of a little dude too.
Yeah,
so he's kind of that Wolverine kind
of.
Well,
he's like a vegan. Like, he talks about him, like, and he went to India to like learn all that stuff and got into yoga and then is a vegan. And now he's a slight guy.
Yeah.
Which is what happens.
I think who I would liken him to now.
Who would you cast?
I feel like there's this guy that has these sideburns like this who's been in some stuff lately. You know what I'm talking about? like these sharp sideburns.
I kind of
the
do,
biopic.
Which is weird.
Kind of
the
like
biopic,
this weird sort of soul.
Yeah.
Conscious. You know what I'm talking about?
I kind of do.
I feel like he could be that guy. Or kind of like
Steve
Michael
Buscemi.
Keaton could play him, or Steve Buscemi-ish.
Oh,
something
Michael
like
Keaton.
That.
Boy, Michael Keaton's killing it in Better Call Saul. Oh, no, wait.
No, that's Michael McKean.
That's Michael McKean, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Michael Keaton was killing. He's going to be killing it in Spider-Man, I think.
Oh, is he?
He's like the Vulture in Spider-Man.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's so weird to see him go back to superhero movies.
Yeah, I know.
Because Birdman was like not really a superhero movie, but it felt kind of
it was
like
so good.
It was, yeah, I loved it.
Referencing it, yeah.
here's something we should consider. What we're all comics. Like, how does comedy? How are these relatable, like being a video game person and a comedian?
Relatable in that I'm quitting right now. the repetition aspect of it, I guess, and just like, you
a dark,
know,
stinky place.
What did Billy say? He did like 72 games before he got his championship, so...
Mm-hmm.
I think of it in a lot of layers. One being like breaking out these days in comedy, I feel like is so similar to breaking out in like being a porn star. There's just very few breakout. Like, oh, you seen this person do porn? Their moves are different. Like, all the moves are kind of the same.
Right.
And yet, so there is... At least in video gaming, there is like that finish line. There's a points status because mm-hmm. if you have a good set or you're getting better at what you do, you never know. Like your peers, I guess, push you along in some way. Then suddenly you're like whoever it is that sold out Madison Square Garden or something. You're like, but everyone watching that is like, are they definitively that much better than everyone else? Mm-hmm. No, probably not. There's just, whereas in video gaming, you're like, well, he got to a billion points. I died out. I tapped out. At, mm-hmm. you know, say 100 million. However, if you watch him play 9 times out of 10, he also tops out at 100 million. He just has mm-hmm. this drive to keep pushing and try it again. Whereas, and maybe that's all it is in the arts or in anything, you just keep at it. You just keep like putting quarters back in. And like, I'm going to keep loading it up, keep playing a new game, keep putting out CDs.
Well, you're competing against yourself. So, like, you know, like, yeah. you have always have that, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's doubting himself along the way. He knows when people are like, you have 99 lives, you're good on points. And he's like, nope, this isn't the one. And he just walks away from mm-hmm. it. And you're like, what is going on? Like, I didn't, this isn't it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's a pretty awesome scene in this doc because eventually, as we learn, is that he is going to go to MAGFest.
Oh, yeah, MAGFest, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was that
2009 MAGFest.
In D.C., because he, Enrico has had this record for, you know, at this
25 years.
Yeah. And
that sort of awakened Timothy McVeigh,
the beast inside,
Does he go get a nibbler and bring it to his house?
Yes. He buys one.
Yes.
The one giveaway.
So he is like, he's in between jobs, I think. He gets a job at a new sort of machining place, and the chemicals are hard on his lungs, and he just works in this weird back little office, and it's kind of a sad life, but he's suddenly this Kraken. I'm riding into town, this gunfighter, and I'm going to take out the new gun. So that part's kind of cool. In the movie, like to have this, here we go. All right, our hero has saddled up, and he's headed into town.
Yeah. Well, that's the point of the doc where I was like, where is this doc going? Like, where are we going with this? And then
hooks you when there's a curve.
And that's when they introduce Dwayne Richards. Mm-hmm. Who is the gunslinger from Canada.
Yeah, the guy who looks like he's in Korn.
He looks like he's in Korn. He's got this weird dreads. Yeah. And like, he's kind of like a, hey, who cares, dude? You're not going to guess what I'm going to say next, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm unpredictable, man.
There's no off switch.
The edgiest Canadian.
Yes, he is the edgiest Canadian. And they show him, and like he was also a great video game player when he was 16.
Yeah, mm-hmm. when he was doing his Robert Smith cure.
Yeah, 16 and 17, and now he's delivering pizzas. Pizza mm-hmm. plays a big role in this documentary.
Yeah.
And then he...
Still wildly confident.
Mm-hmm. Very confident. Yeah. Extremely confident. And then they set them up to play at MAGFest.
Why does Dwayne decide that he wants to go for it? Why does he decide he wants to go for Nibbler? Just because he wanted to beat Enrico's.
I bid you farewell. And should anyone ever top this score, well, I'll rise up and I'll beat them back.
Yeah.
Good night. And then he just dwells underground for, 25 years?
Yes.
And then now... The knock at the door. We've recognized Enrico's score. Is that what had happened? Like they officially recognized it?
I think that he wanted to, like, he was like, I just want to bury that score.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So I want to put it away.
I want to be number one. And he was good at a bunch of games. And he professionally works on boards. That's a little foreshadowing.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And he is good at a bunch of different kind of games. And like, he's just going to.
And you feel like with both of them, too, that the spotlight has been off for long enough where they're like, maybe King of Kong helped. They're like, hey, people are starting to give a shit again. What if I can get the spotlight back on me some? It does feel like both of them have that in them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That little tinge of narcissism that. Why wouldn't you have it? If you're the best in the world at something, you'd probably have the, like, it was kind of nice.
Yeah.
I got absolutely. A key to a city.
Which is also, they keep making the reference back to, like, people have to just have Nibbler explain to them all the time. It's like, I'm the best in the world at this thing that, like, from 1983?
Yeah. I don't remember that.
Very, like, underplayed game.
Yeah. It's like, I'm the best at doing the Roger Rabbit or something. Very time-based.
Yeah.
And then they do some cutaways to two of my favorite people, were the arcade techs with the guy with the severely cross-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like...
The one guy that's just driving all over the place and
when during MAGFest when they actually didn't have the cabinets ready. They didn't have the Nibbler cabinets ready, and he had a Frankenstein, like some old other cabinet shell and then put together like the board. And then the do we want to get to the what happens to Dwayne's board?
Not to foreshadow it too much, but if this were a movie, they would have constantly been showing the back of the board and like some little shorting or something. Or like, you know, he warns them, guys, this is really Frankenstein together back there. Don't bump it. Don't touch it. It is just, which I never fully understood. Like, they should have shown us maybe the connections. Like, why are these connections? They're either connected or they're not.
Yeah.
Couldn't you put something there that, or tape it, do something where it's a little more solid? But no, it's, they were told like, this is rough. This is thin ice.
Yeah, because like he said, it usually takes like 8 hours, and he was doing it like 5 hours or something like that.
And then we find that Dwayne was just beating on his console during the competition.
Yeah.
So they set up two consoles by each other with cameras and a projection screen at this MAGFest. And
no one is watching.
Well, no, at one point he says a big crowd. He's like, you know, you're in front of this big crowd, and they do a shot, a cut, and it's like three guys with their arms folded. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And they're in the strangest area. It's like you can hear all this commotion happening behind them, people passing out business cards and checking out new, probably VR and things like that. Yeah. And then off in this weird little enclave, two old school Nibbler machines with two very unappealing looking dudes sitting there playing away.
And Walter Day kind of just trying to like hype it up a little bit. Walter Day is a hype man.
Yeah. My favorite is also like these fests are just so nerdy and geeky, and they have like the countdown for New Year's Eve.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, and
what's your resolution?
Yeah, yeah.
10/24 by 7.
Yeah, it's such a horrible joke. But also you see no one getting a kiss. The one thing that happens the one thing that happens on New Year's Eve is everyone kisses, and it's like 3, 2, 1, happy New Year's, and everyone just kind of looks at their phone.
Monster energy drinks for all.
And then when Tim gets up, that's one where he quits the first time.
Yes.
And I don't think the other guy, Dwayne.
Dwayne's his screen freezes.
But has it already frozen, or is he still playing away?
No, it just goes.
It just goes.
Freezes, and he's just like, I'm just going to watch Tim for a while.
But he had done the most dickish move too, which is, hey man, I'm gonna go get a bite to eat and a soda or something. When I come back, like, let's queue it up.
Yeah.
And Dwayne goes, all right. And then he just starts playing.
Oh yeah.
And so then Timothy comes back and goes, hey, you're playing?
Yeah.
And
there's a little bit of a gentleman's like agreement before that. Like, they were like talking to each other on the phone about it and stuff, and trying to like have it be kind of like, oh, you know, we're just being, it's friendly competition. And then Dwayne is pulling a lot of dick.
Yes. Is it dick? And I feel like if you know your television or telephone conversation is being recorded for a documentary, you seem like a nice guy. And if you're talking with Tim and you want him to show up to this event, you probably act like a nice guy. But if you know at the event you want to destroy him and humiliate him, you do what he did, which is be such an asshole and like start without
it's
him.
It's kind of the like Amadeus and
Salieri.
Salieri. You know, like that's how they're kind of presented. And then because he beats up on his machine, it freezes.
Yeah.
And
but don't you think he's beating up on it because he knows maybe that Tim is Mozart? Like, he's catching up to him. He's better than him. He's just quietly playing and sirping on his soda. And he's over there beating, this damn thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I did get the sense of, like, victory or just justice kind of was there that day.
And then they talked to some people, one of the three kids that are watching. He's like, he was just punching it. He was, like, really hitting it hard, which is awesome.
Which, if they had cameras up, why didn't we get to see more of that? We didn't really see a lot of the footage of how he was treating
But they're definitely presenting this, like, white hat, black hat kind of thing in there. Mm-hmm. And then they even go so far as to talk to like the technicians and stuff
about the chips, right?
Yeah, about the chips. Yeah,
the guy essentially just says like, "I warned him. Like, this is exactly what I
and
said."
And then one of my favorite moments is Walter Day gets on the phone with Billy Mitchell.
Yeah. Well, this is after he's walked away, though, right? This is after I thought he got on the phone with him to convince Tim
to
come back.
Tim to to keep going.
Keep going.
Yeah. Give him a pep talk. And Billy's like, what? And he's like, pep talk. And he's like, huh? He's like, and then it says in little captions, like, phone, like, weak phone signal.
Yeah, that sound.
And then low battery. Oh, my God. And then he's like, I have to go over here.
And he's gone.
Yeah. And then like, he storms away. Oh, man, it's awesome. That's an awesome moment. And then what happens is that he goes, because he doesn't want to do it, because he's too tired and doesn't think he's going to be able to. And then we find out that Dwayne Richard sets the record.
Which happened in King of Kong, too. A mysterious videotape just shows up and, ha-ha, I've done it.
Yeah.
And everyone's fine with it for a while.
Until.
Until they realize that.
Side-by-side.
Side-by-side, his game works faster than Timothy McVeigh's game. And they're like, what? How do you do that? It's not possible. But Dwayne's like, I don't fucking know. But he works at a shop that fixes fucking arcade games.
And if you just take out this chip and put in this other one, and boost the speed by like 1.2 or something like that, it's negligible, hours, but it would shave hours off of a 30 or 40 hour thing.
Yeah.
And he plays dumb. Goes, I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
But as a viewer, you're like, you are not a good guy.
Yeah.
You did this on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody messed with this.
Does that thing of like, oh yeah, I'm guilty of twitching the chips.
Yeah,
like come on, like
who me?
Yeah,
like I would do that exactly. So then the spirit of Timothy McVeigh comes back one last time because now he's like, fuck that, I am gonna do this thing, and he's like, I keep quitting. It's like 2 years later or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's a long run over the course of this documentary.
Yeah.
And so you only see him quit, and you see him do it in a way where he's sleep deprived, like you mentioned. Like your brain's not operating in the most like, oh, I'm going to be really convivial and sweet. Like it's just this primitive lizard brain's like, I quit. Yeah. Everything's bad. And then probably taking a while to come back from that of like, that's the best I had in me.
Yeah,
like that. I had everything going, and I just slipped, and I couldn't get it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so to gear up once again.
One more time. Yeah, then he gets it delivered to his house, a Nibbler.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tries again.
This is like the Thanksgiving one, I think.
This is where all the friends come by.
Because he has a full-time job. He can only do this on like the long weekend.
It was Easter weekend. Yeah, and he can only do it during Easter weekend. And all of his friends show up, and they're all a bunch. They're all just kind of sitting there and watching him try to break this record.
And try not to chat too much. Try not to make too much of a commotion. Well, so a lot of them just sit there, and then every now and again go, we're behind you, Tim.
Yeah. And he gets madder and madder. And my thing is like, and she keeps, and then the dogs are barking. Like I was getting a little anxious because the dog started barking because people were coming over. And it's like, tell people to go home. Like, give them a break. Give this gentle giant a little space, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Do you remember, like, I think like maybe his wife like punctures like a weird blister, and a bunch of green shit comes out.
It's rough.
Was that his foot? What was that?
His thumb.
This
is thumb.
That was his
playing.
Fucking thumb.
Yeah, from playing.
From green from the Monster Energy drinks. Yeah. All the Gatorade.
But you might remember Dwayne wears a glove on his shifting hand.
Yeah. Because his hand becomes hamburger. At
Exactly.
And like hamburger. In that Seinfeld episode where he's trying to. Same thing. Like, I want to be the best at Frogger again. I can't let this game be unplugged because my initials will go away forever.
Yeah.
I had the perfect mix of, what is it, pizza grease and sweat.
And he puts in, because he does get the high score and he writes in sucks. He doesn't get a billion, but he does. She's like, you got to put your initials in close up, S-U-X. It's like, oh man, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So attempt number 7, it was January of 1984. It was the middle of the night. The door was locked to the public. The lights in the front were turned off. I was at 900 million. That was the longest I'd ever played at that point on any game ever. And Walter called a local news station to let him know that, you know, potentially the first billion point game was going to take place that night.
Timmy was at a point where he was less than 2 hours from the record.
I'm fighting fatigue. It's hard to keep my eyes open.
He was struggling, and he was losing men faster than he was gaining them.
Tim was probably losing for the last 10 hours of play.
That was excruciating.
Come on, man, Timmy's dying. All of us were awake, and I was standing with him.
People coming in, they're setting up lights behind me, setting up cameras. I've been in this dark arcade for 40 hours. You know, it's reasonably dark, and now it's really bright, and it's like all the glare that was on the screen and bothering my eyes. And 10 million to go, about a half hour to get there. I think I had under 10 lives left. I was thinking, I can't believe I'm gonna get this close and I'm not gonna get it.
Timmy, you don't have to make it to a billion. To make it to the end of this board. And so it was a quest simply to get to the next board, never minding the score. And I remember specifically telling him, if you get it, then it's all over. If you don't get it, it's just like before you started. And everything is for nothing.
Come on, one more board. Don't die. Not now. Not now. I don't want to do this again. Just, come on. You got to get it now. Now or never.
It's like when the two-minute clock starts and you're down to the last 50 seconds and your quarterback has one last snap.
10 more million, 5 more million, 4 more million.
He definitely was facing loss and catastrophe at that last moment, but he pulled it out.
When it finally hits, the score rolls over. You know, that's all there was. I couldn't have played any longer anyway. I just simply got up and walked away. That was it.
He had 10 men left.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Do you guys fuck with Twitch at all? Because I guess
yeah,
that's what this
I know
is,
of it. Right? I've never watched it.
I've watched it because I play a lot of Overwatch. So
what's that one?
PS4. It's a video game with like animated characters. It's like a single shooter, but you're in teams of six.
Okay.
You play online. It's awesome. I love it. So I watch Overwatch Twitch.
You'll just watch someone else playing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I like the best in the world at this one character because I play a certain character that I'm very good at, and I watch the best in the world play to pick up little, you know, tips.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. Little tricks and shit.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Professional gamers, man.
Because this seems like this is all pre-Twitch, right? Is Twitch since like 2000?
I think it's only been two years.
2 years?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Leroy Jenkins video?
Leroy Jenkins, no.
It's, I think, I want to say it's World of Warcraft. And so they're all headphoned up and they're five people from different places in the world. And they're convening outside this cave. And they're like, how many grenades do you have? I think we got to go in. We got to flank here. And they're all sort of reporting. And then one guy just goes, Leroy Jenkins. And he starts sprinting into the cave. And they're all like, hey, no. All right, go. And they all start following. And they just get killed in this bloodbath.
Oh, my God.
And then afterwards, you can just hear them all taking off their heads. It's like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Why did you, Leroy, what were you thinking?
Leroy Jenkins.
That's if you just Google that or search that on YouTube, it's to me worth it. Because I feel like that was the impetus sort of toward Twitch and these sort of things. People are like, I would watch that. Yeah. It's really funny.
Put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Tim has a bunch of friends come over, and one of his friends, I even wrote down, said one of the most ingenious things I've ever heard, cereal milk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, God
damn. There is a cereal milk bar. I feel like there's one in New York.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I felt like the way they don't humor him is exactly how that would go if you did that on stage.
Yes. Amen. Amen.
Why is there no cereal milk?
Hey, you love to drink. What's your favorite thing to do after eating cereal? Drink the milk.
Drink the milk.
There. Why is there no cereal milk? Just crickets.
You could
they
tell
included
them.
It though.
So. Yeah, they included it, but just to do that to it. Yeah, like the filmmakers were like, this isn't the only thing like this. Yeah. This guy said the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the director watched King of Kong and was like, I can make people look like idiots too in editing. And then like, because the way they do like the Dwayne thing and some of this stuff, come and go. What is that?
I don't know.
That might mean how at the end they show how many people do it. You know, he fails on Easter.
Right.
He boots back up again.
Yeah.
And his wife this time is way less hopeful.
Yes.
She's like, I'm there for
less
you.
Less supportive.
But I'll be down the hall.
Yeah. Yeah. And she has nice new hair.
Kind of moved on.
Yeah.
And then he does it.
Yeah.
And then, and I guess it's maybe the fatigue or something like that where you feel, you know, he gets to what, 1 million, probably 100,000. Mm-hmm. So just barely gets over, or 1 billion and then like 100,000.
Yeah.
And he goes, I did it. Mm-hmm. I got it. It's over with. The Italian guy goes, great.
Yeah,
good
job.
He's
like, I get blowjobs every night. I'm fucking handsome. Yeah.
I know. Like, yeah. My life is a fairy tale.
Yeah. They kind of try to bring back this one thing of like the mac and cheese, like the mother's love.
Yeah.
There's also this really bizarre thing where like after one of his fails, the next day his dad dies.
Oh,
remember
right.
That?
Yeah.
That's the only time you see him get like King of Kong kind of sad.
Yeah, that's right. He died the next day. That's right.
And his
dad
was a race car driver.
Yeah.
Or he's not the race car driver. He's the guy who pushed the broken cars off the track.
But Tim has always had this secret desire to. Mm-hmm. When
to
I was
break
a kid,
out.
I was pretty good at go karts and stuff. And I bet if I
were BMXing,
and. So, not to spoil anything, but that's a cool ending. Because
after credits, yeah.
Yeah, like the Nibbler thing is great, but then you start seeing, like, everyone beats it. The world, 15 people keep topping it over and over again.
Rick Carter.
Yeah, Rick Carter.
Yep.
Is the current holder?
Yes.
Because there was, like, a Japanese, few people from Japan did it, and then I feel like there was the girl, is that right? Are they all men?
I think they're all men.
I think they're all men.
I felt like there was one
girl, it could be.
But yeah, mostly dudes, but a variety of different like ages, you know, like young kids and stuff like that.
People that were born way after Nibbler was out of fashion. So.
Yeah, and then someone finally got, who currently holds the world record to this day, Mr. Rick Carter.
Yeah.
And his is way up there.
Way up there.
It's a billion and several hundred million, right?
Yeah. Well, he had also won previously as well. Like Rick had beaten Enrico's, which is kind of, I think, one of the catalysts is for them to go to MagFest.
Oh,
because he was the previous winner. And he looks very confident. He looks like he sells cars or something.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, that's not, You can have your cereal milk. I'm going to get this Nibbler thing.
Here's like a thing that happens, which is like, I think you want to see this evolution happen for Tim, right?
Yeah.
Like, because he's, in a lot of ways, even though he's a married, middle-aged man, you know, he still rides his bike, wears his sweatpants, eats his pizza, does his menial job.
Yeah.
You see, like, the thing happen where his life does get better. Like, his sense of pride feels more validated in a way.
Yeah.
And he, like, improves his job a little bit. Then he tries different things. And I guess we're getting to the end of the whole thing.
I don't know if this appealed to you at all, but he, to me, seemed like someone where you're like, I want to be friends with that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know that means like that he just seemed like the best person or whatever, but I like when people have that thing in them where they can sort of spike up and like, I am going to better my job a little bit, or I'm going to go pursue this thing.
I might put on a dress shirt.
Yeah. There's something just very likable about him. We're just very unassuming and like.
He seems like a real sweetheart.
Yeah.
I mean, he seemed like a dick when he was 16.
He
but
did.
Now
yeah.
at 40 something, he seems like a nice guy.
I ended up liking, I think I liked Enrico also. I felt like he was
Totally.
You know, I mean, even Dwayne, I gotta feel mixed feelings about Dwayne.
Yeah.
Because he's like kind of like a dick, but then you think like, did he try to cheat?
Right.
Because that's actually sadder.
Yeah.
Oh, it's way sadder. But that's all I see beaming through
him.
For
the worst thing.
Right, right.
I mean, to me, that's all that's beaming out of him is like, I need this so desperately.
Right.
I'm not letting on how much. Like, I got to have something. I was the king of the world.
Yeah.
I was this prodigy. I was on magazine covers.
Yes.
And now look at me.
I'm delivering pizzas in Toronto.
And I have corn guitarist hair.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
He did manage to change that by the end.
You got a fresh do.
Yeah.
But just like the guy from Corn looks now.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all.
But maybe they all have that. Where you have to say goodbye. You have to let go to that thing of, you know, I'm me now, and I'm pretty good at delivering pizzas, and I'm happy, I'm content in my life.
Yeah, this is what I do.
Yeah,
I have found the new me.
Yeah. And so,
if you can look in the mirror each morning and like what you see, why not?
Yeah,
I mean, it has the arc of every sports thing.
It does.
Like, it is like the same arc that every sports thing goes through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we find that Dwayne at the very end in the credits is racing cars.
No, not Dwayne, Tim.
I'm sorry, Tim.
And he squeezes in, because it's a car where he's got to go in through the window, and they really have to hustle him in there. Oh. The steering wheel comes right up to him. Yeah. I mean, he's doing it. He's doing it.
Yes, yeah. That's true.
I don't know if he's still married or not.
Yeah.
But they don't show that, but
I think she seems super dedicated.
Oh, she loves him.
She really loves her Timmy.
She had every reason to, as a character, be just an idiot or someone that, right. But she's with it. She's very sweet and she supports him, and there's no hint of her like winking at the camera being like, I hope he gets this thing. Yeah. She's like fully with him. Mm-hmm. Like, this is great, and if this is your Mount Everest, sweetie, we can do it.
Yeah.
That was really endearing about her.
Yeah. Right?
You know, she could easily have been like, yeah, let me get your mac and cheese so you can be a video game champion.
Yeah. And staying up for 36 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's sort of like when you have these kinds of documentaries where there's really not a significant thing at stake, so it can be kind of like funny.
Yeah.
That there is sometimes it feels patronizing or exploitative. But I don't think in the end that it was that, even though it had like the shape of that a little bit. Like, you could kind of be like look at these Midwest losers, but you root for them at the end.
Of course, yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say it's a path and an obstacle that they choose. So it's, you know.
Yeah.
They're all games. I mean, the first people got together and started kicking some sort of ball and then said, that's a goal. If I kick it over there between those two cans, and then football is born, or soccer, or hockey, whatever. And then when they beat it, when they achieve that thing or accomplish it, and we go, all right, cool, you did it. If you got the silver medal throwing shot put, I'd still think you're cool. I know it's going to burn you for the rest of your life that I could have just the right form thrown it this way, or if I just moved my guy, I would have gotten to 1 billion points in this video game, or whatever accomplishments are. Oh, I could have won best rhubarb pie at that cook-off, and I got that goddamn second place medal. Yeah. Someone like Tom Brady has won a Super Bowl so many times where it's like, you beat the game, man.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah.
You're 40. Play with your kids.
Play Nibbler.
Yeah, play Nibbler. Have a fun new thing.
Your wife's a supermodel.
Yeah, man. And we attach like what's real. Sports movies and sports accomplishments, those are real. It's a game.
Yeah.
The video game, I mean, not to draw too close of a comparison, I mean, it's a different thing. It does require way less physical exertion, if nothing else. But I do feel like every accomplishment that humans set out to do probably results in like, I'm up here on the top of Everest. I didn't burst into a beam of light. Yeah. I didn't suddenly become endowed with all the knowledge of the world. I got to walk my ass back down there. I'm tired. And then I'm going to tell people and they're going to go, cool. Did you take pictures? And then in a year, they'll be like, this is my buddy. He climbed Everest. What's everyone want to eat? It's going to become like so insignificant.
Yeah. Like that sort of that's Roboros or whatever, just like swallowing your own tail of like, just like achievement, right?
Yeah.
Like we all are. I feel like I'm doing it. We're all like, look at what we do. We're all comedians. We all want some kind of validation, right? But like, do we not? I don't have like a white whale of like a thing. Like, I wish I did something amazing at 16. That's gonna just shadow me forever. So, but then that feeling of maybe I've never peaked.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe I will never peak.
But it's also a matter of perspective. There are 16-year-olds who've never started a magazine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I mean, so like, it's all a matter of perspective as well.
Yeah.
I mean, like for a lot of people in this perspective, even the people that came over to sit in his living room to watch a man play a video game, like to them, that was something. So
absolutely.
Like,
yeah. I would have been one of those people if I was invited. Like, hell yes, I'll be there.
Hell yeah. I'm bringing a six pack and another pizza with myself.
Can I watch MASH on mute in the corner?
Oh my God. It's a perfect night. That'd be awesome.
I think Paco's Twitch channel is him commenting on MASH.
Oh my God. You guys are giving me great ideas.
I hope you do. I think it'd be fantastic.
Just a Mystery Science 3000 of one and Mean MASH. Yeah.
Yeah. I think about Kevin Hart selling out a football stadium. It's to him, like, not a lot of people have that ambition and or are able to do it.
Right.
I mean, if you see your first open mic, like, let's just magic wand goes over your head. What do you see best case scenario? Like, I don't know, maybe I get to put out a CD or something.
Yeah.
Like, or 53,000 tickets sold. Right. And then what do you do coming back down? People are like, saw your last special. I liked it.
It was okay.
That's why I love that Chappelle thing, because he's like, Kevin Hart is like, he's just like, there's some, this like 10-minute bit where he's bitter about how successful Kevin Hart is.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only guy who can do that
too. It's true. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, guys, this was fun.
I agree.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Maybe there's some lessons within this documentary about letting go of those trophies or those things that give you validation or getting them again.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like the level of peace he has where he's like, I said I'd come back and top it if someone beat it. Mm-hmm. I did it. And then they keep beating it.
Yeah.
After the moment he beats it, they beat it 10 more times.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, well.
Oh, God damn it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to find peace in your successes. If you don't, you're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, you're fucked. You're going to go out poorly. If you can't rest on your laurels and count your blessings and be like, you know what? I fucking did it. Because there's people like Jordan, who that fucking guy was the owner and a player for his own team when he was fat and over the hill. Like, come on, dude. Like,
yeah.
There are amazing quarterbacks who end up going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or something and keep playing when they should not be. It's like, you did it.
Yeah.
Like, come on. So I don't know what that is for us, but
I don't know either, man.
Yeah. The idea of like retiring from your creative pursuits.
It's tough, dude. I almost moved back to Michigan to get married and to live in a cul-de-sac with a girl, my wife, and who has little kids, and it was going to be over for me. She'd be like, I don't, you know, maybe it's a hobby.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's fine. But I'm in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm going to fucking die. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she was even saying, like, you should work at Best Buy. You like technology. Like, she meant it. I was like, I don't even have a blue shirt.
You got to rip people like that out of your life. That's horrific.
Well, she did it for me. So.
Oh, good. Good. That's terrible. That's so terrible that, like, this is what life is. We'll have these kids, and you'll go every day to Best Buy, and you'll come home, and, like, you'll look at me, and I'll smile enough to where you'll forget this gnawing in the back of your head about how unhappy you are.
Yeah.
You'll get over it.
It'll be fine. Oh, man. Well, David, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for riding the snake with us.
Yes.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scoville.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.